Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 77 of the Crick Picks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. With me is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere, and Varun Alvaconda, who you can find absolutely nowhere. And
Did you see what Varun did? You started the show and he decided during the intro that he was going to drink orange juice.
Oh.
No, well, drinking Fanta.
I missed that. But anyway, a quick briefing for all of you. Do you? Anyway,
yeah, it's either protein shake, Fanta, or a cup Pepsi.
Like Jared said, hustle before we start this recording, and now we're talking about Varun drinking Fanta. But anyway, for all of you guys who are new to Cricket Picks, what we do on this show is that we take any generic cricket category and we draft our top 15 for that category, 5 each, in a snake-style draft competition. So the pick order goes 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1. And the topic for today is coming directly from our patrons on Patreon. And it is best dual nation cricketers to have ever played the sport. And I mean, there are lots of fun names in there. And I mean, I'm pretty excited for this one. And the research was really, really fun. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah. Also, as Varun said before we started, it's very rare we do a crick picks where there's actually just a Wikipedia page that does like 98% of the work for us.
That's also true. But anyway, I have first pick for this one, and then Varun is second, and Jared is third. And I'm a bit confused because when I did my research, there's an out-and-out winner when it comes to the best dual nation cricketer who has played for two different international teams. But there is another one whom I kind of went in a rabbit hole or down a rabbit hole in terms of my research, and it was a really interesting story to tell, which is why I'm going to go ahead and pick that guy. My first pick is the original Nawab of Patodi, Iftikhar Ali Khan Patodi. And he played 6 tests in total, 3 each for India and England. He is the only cricketer ever to have played test cricket both for India and England. And people often confuse Mansoor Ali Khan Patodi, his son, Tiger, as the guy who the Patodi trophy was named after. But it's actually Iftikhar, who, because he played for both countries, that's why the trophy's name was Patodi. And look, this guy, when I look deep into his record, he scores a ton in his debut test, which is versus Australia at the SCG in the Bodyline series. And wait for it, it gets better. He was very vocal as far as his dissent was concerned towards Douglas Jardine's tactics. And then Jardine chucks him out of the team, right? And it's also funny because this guy is not like someone with a spectacular record. That SCG ton is the only time he crosses 50 in test cricket, and he's averaging 19.9 in 6 tests. But his first class average is 48.6 in 127 games. So he clearly was a proper bat. And there was also a 12-year gap between his last test for England and his first test for India in 1946. He only scores 55 runs in 5 innings for India. And he also, very unfortunately, dies at an early age. He was just 41. He suffered from a heart attack while playing polo at Tiger's 11th birthday. So just because there was so much in this story, he is my first pick.
Yeah, he's obviously not the best dual nation cricketer of all time, though, is he?
Yeah, no. But dude, I was so fascinated with the whole bodyline story.
I think he was a better bat than his test record probably shows. And I think he was a pretty good player. I didn't have him at the top of my list. He's high, but I don't want to say you've Dilshan Fernando'd yourself. Yeah. But all I would say is this. Wouldn't it have been better if you'd just put Anderson and Sachin as number one instead?
Yeah, I suppose
very
so.
Very true, very true.
But dude, like the whole bodyline story where...
Yeah, he's a really important cricketer. There's no doubt about it. He might be one of the most important dual nation cricketers of all time.
Also,
I don't know if he's the best.
Apparently, Jardine asked him to stand at short leg and he refuses. And then Jardine goes like, oh, His Highness has an issue and whatever. They properly had like a tiff, and then he doesn't play for England for another 2 years.
The funny thing about that is also that if there was ever going to be another player who played for England and for India, it probably would have been Jardine as well. So he was the other player who's in line to play for both of them. So... maybe they had some issues. I think they were both quite confident men is maybe a way of putting that.
Fair. Anyway, let's move on to Varun then. Who do you have for us?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who I don't actually know who play for both countries. So I'm just going to go for someone I've relatively heard of, Kepler Wessels.
Oh, that was the best pick on numbers for me. It was between him and
There's other people, but there's two people I actually know. in this list relatively well. So Kepler Wessels plays for Australia, when South Africa were banned, and then he plays for South Africa, right? Once they're back.
Yeah.
Test cricket, or is this all international cricket?
It's all international. Everything
in format.
So why are you so confused, Varun? There's so many players you know.
Yeah, I would have thought there's a lot of players that you know.
Yeah, tons.
Nah, there's some I know, some I don't.
Modern players.
I tell you this.
Not all of them are good, though. Not all of them are good. That's the thing.
That is also true. I would say this. Varun, of all people, would have hated watching Kepler Wessels more than anyone else on Earth. He was fucking painful to watch, mate. And I like
slow batting in Test cricket. I really enjoy it.
Have a look at his one-day record.
His one-day record was very dodgy.
Test cricket, not ODI cricket.
There were one-day games where I think he was batting in negative strike rate. Like, he really was painful. But he wasn't pretty to watch either. He was kind of like a more defensive... He's like a weird hybrid between, I don't know, Simon Kadich, Graham Smith, and Alistair Cook. He really was one of the worst batters to watch. But so... He was so bloody minded. And also, think about what it must have been like.
ODIs. Jesus.
Okay. Yeah, strike rate is pretty dodgy in ODIs. Yeah.
It must, like, for him to get into the Australian side, I think was a big deal at that stage. Because, like, Victoria and New South Wales, I don't think allowed for overseas players. So I think there were some great players who played club cricket. Like, I don't think Wes Hall played for New South Wales, unless I'm misremembering. And Victoria had other players that could have played for them, and they just didn't pick them. So to get to the national team, like, think of how good Kepler must have been. And, of course, he's someone on to play as well. Nothing but respect for him. But if I have to watch him bat ever again, I will cry.
Well, I actually thought that he was on numbers the number one pick, right? If I didn't really want to tell the Iftikhar Ali Khan Pataudi story, I would have picked him. Because he's a left-handed opening batter who plays 40 test matches, and he's averaging 41 with the bat. 24 came for Australia, 16 came for South Africa. He averages nearly 43 for Australia and 38 for South Africa. Let's forget the ODI record for a second, because it's very, very bad. And
we should talk about the ODI record. His strike rate for Australia was 50, and his ODI strike rate is 55. How the hell do you only strike a 5 more in ODI cricket?
Yeah, he's not even averaging exceptionally well, right? Like, overall, his average is 34.35 in ODIs. So, but
I mean,
what
for
I've
that
heard,
era, that's not too bad.
From what I've heard, Jared, he was a good captain. He does go on to become a prominent captain for South Africa, one of the earlier captains for them post-readmission. But I've also heard that he was a hardliner in terms of his personality.
He's absolutely nuts. Proper South Africa.
I think I could have told you that just looking at his record.
Or his face. Just a proper Southern African guy, no nonsense. No, there was, just straight down the line. I'm going to do everything I can to be the best cricketer I can be. And I will smile when I have my first grandchild. That's the sort of guy he is.
I'm going,
this is easy for me, because I think you've actually both left the two best dual nation cricketers of all time on the list.
Okay.
Which I'm a bit shocked. Did either of you look up JJ Ferris's bowling average?
I did, but then, of course, it's JJ Ferris, and what can I possibly talk to when I'm talking about him, right?
So JJ Ferris, I think,
that's
is unlucky.
That's precisely the conclusion I had.
There's about three bowlers in that period who have similar records to him, but he did it over two countries, and his numbers actually, again, hold up in first-class cricket. So he has one of the lowest bowling averages in the history of Test cricket. Obviously, he doesn't play a lot of games, but he took 800 wickets in first-class cricket at what? 12 or 13 or something like that, Varun as well. Like, it's ridiculous, his overall record. Absolutely brilliant. So JJ Ferris, George Lohman era bowlers when no one could hit them. And then I would say Owen Morgan. I don't know
I was confused between him and Wessels for the first pick for some reason.
Morgan high on my list.
I mean, he didn't win. He was terrible in Test match cricket, but he revolutionized white ball cricket through what England was doing, and he won a World Cup. When he left, we all went, oh, it's not that big a loss. They'll be fine. They've been shithouse since he left in white ball cricket, right? They've won one tournament with this. Do you remember Matt Roller was like, no, this is a machine that's going to roll on. The machine lost three of its wheels, right? And it managed to win one tournament in that time since. I think Owen Morgan's a really, really important player in the history of the game. So, JJ Ferris and Owen Morgan.
Yeah, I mean, he's England's only ODI World Cup winning captain. He's also the second highest run scorer in the format behind Joe Root, right? And he's averaging nearly 40 for both teams, I think. No, for England. For England, he's averaging 40 at a strike rate of 94, which is amazing. And for Ireland, he's only played 23 ODIs, but he's still averaging 35.4, and he was young back then. And like Jared said, you know, his major contribution is beyond runs. It's the captaincy. It's how he spearheaded England's white-hot revolution. And he made the reverse sweep mainstream, not only by leading the way and doing it himself versus spin, but also, like, you know, as a tactic, right? That is a tactic, how you continue to reverse sweep versus spinners, and his entire team would do it. Okay?
Yes.
So that means we're back to
about who Owen Morgan is. I don't know what you thought about Owen Morgan, like you're talking about JJ Ferris.
Varun, before you make your second pick, I would just like to remind you that there are a bunch of active cricketers who you're not even thinking about, buddy.
You know? I think I'm thinking about them. I just don't know which direction to go in.
I don't think any of them are any good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yes. I'm just going to go again for a cricketer. Like, again, I don't know relatively lot about David Rees. Fuck it.
Yeah, sure.
That was when you said you didn't know anyone. I was like, I'm pretty sure you're a David Rees fan. I don't understand. No,
I was looking at the test list. I didn't know anyone except for like Kepler Vessels and that, I think.
Fair. But yeah, Rees's career never really took off for
Rees's
the Proteus.
Yeah, Rees's record is great, right?
Yeah. But then he
explodes. He has a great career. Then he turns himself into a T20 merchant as well.
Yes.
Really, very important for Namibia.
He talks about it on the podcast, didn't he? Like, he was a slow ball bowler and they suddenly became into fashion. Is that what he said? I'm trying to remember, but he explained why he was a late bloomer. It was really, really interesting, but obviously a great professional. Really nice guy as well. I'm glad he's on the list. I had him a little bit lower, but there's a bunch of people that it's kind of a bit tricky because some of their best records are with the associate teams and you're not quite sure exactly where to put them.
But if you look at his overall T20 batting numbers, he's averaging 23 at a strike rate of 144.6, right?
Yeah.
So that's very impressive.
And he's in your best five bowlers.
Yes. And I love the arc because he plays for South Africa. His career doesn't really take off. Then he explodes onto the franchise T20 scene. And particularly in the PSL for the Lahore Qalandars, he's literally a cult hero in Lahore, right? And then he goes on to play for Namibia. And let's not forget that 2021...
Does he have a flyer named after him? Or was that just a meme?
No, that's just a meme. But let's not forget the 2021 T20 World Cup, right? Where Namibia qualify for the Super 10 stage thanks to David Wiesa. That's a big moment in his career. So,
I mean, Ben Dunk is also a PSL hero. Like, PSL heroes can be quite odd.
But this is a guy who had immense longevity to his game, not just skill. He was a seasoned pro in franchise T20s. Anyway, so we are four picks down in total. And now it's back to me for two consecutive
picks. Hopefully we're
picks.
Five picks down in total.
Do we?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, we do. We do have five picks down in total. Okay, now it gets really tricky. All right, because now you've got a lot of T20 merchants. Which one do I go with? I'm going to go with another one whose story I really love. A roll-off van der Merwe. He plays for South Africa in ODIs and T20s at the end of the 2000s, right? So he played in the semi-final for South Africa in the T20 World Cup in 2009 at Trent Bridge versus Pakistan, right? He loses that semi-final. 13 years later, in 2022, he knocks South Africa out of semi-final contention in the T20 World Cup in Australia. He plays a major role in that victory, takes that catch that we all remember, right? And his record checks out for South Africa as well. So he's a slow left-armer who bowled 59 times in T20Is, 13 times for South Africa and 46 times for the Netherlands. And he's averaging 19.26 overall. He has an economy of 6.5. And for both those teams, he has an economy of under 7, which is amazing. And this is a guy who's no mug with the bat, extremely handy. And he's an absolute live wire in the field who has one of the more full of raw emotion celebrations of all time, right? We love that about Roloff.
Look, his South African career is really interesting because him and Johan Botha were brought in together. And his first, when he first started playing, he was like, I don't know, if Glenn Maxwell had only been eating Shahid Afridi's blood. Like, it was nuts the way he was batting, like, in a way that didn't even exist, doesn't even exist now, right?
Yeah.
And then he goes on to be an anchor years later for the Dutch and for Somerset as well, and in franchise cricket around the world. He should have played a lot more top-level franchise cricket. He's a really skillful player. He should have played more for South Africa. I think with South Africa, they decided that Johan Botha was the better bowler, so they went with Johan Botha. And it's like, yeah, he's a better bowler, but Roloff can be a real batter. And so they probably picked the wrong person to stick around with, and Roloff disappeared, right? And they never they never got him back. But I think he's a fantastic career. He was very high up on my list.
Yeah, same. Anyway, I have got another.
Also,
pick
I
over
once
here.
Saw him do karaoke in Dubai.
Ooh, that sounds exciting. Anyway,
and he's the only person on this list I've seen do karaoke in Dubai.
Before I make my second pick or third in total, we have to take a short break. You guys are watching Trick Picks with Jared, Behram and Varun, and we'll be back with you in like half a minute, so go nowhere.
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the Nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
Welcome back to Crick Picks. You guys are with Behram, Jared, and Varun. And yeah, so in this little break, I actually bought myself some time. So that was part of my strategy. And I'm actually going to go for another important cricketer who might not be really good as far as numbers are concerned. And I've thought about this. For my third pick, I'm going for Abdul Hafiz Kardar, who was a left-handed batter who was also Pakistan's first test captain. He played three tests for India in England in 1946 prior to playing for Pakistan or captaining Pakistan. And he only averaged 16 in those. But for Pakistan, he goes on to play 23 test matches. He is captain in all of them, wins six, loses six, and draws 10, which is a phenomenal record if you're talking about an infant test cricket nation. He's averaged nearly 25, right, in those test matches for Pakistan. And his overall average is 23.76 in 26 test matches. But he is someone who is considered the father of Pakistan cricket. You know, Oxford graduate, much like Iftikhar Ali Khan Pataudi, actually. And then he plays for both Oxford and Warwickshire. He marries, like, some woman who is the daughter of someone at Warwickshire. I can't remember who, but he plays a lot of county cricket, and also he has a spectacular record as captain, even if a lot of that has to do with Fazal Mahmood.
Yeah, I think obviously Fazal Mahmood does have a very big a part to play in it, but the only issue I would have with the two guys you've picked is they both, I think they could both play cricket. I think they're both very smart men. There is an element of the fact that they were very well educated is why they played for both of those countries.
That's
rather than potentially that, you know, there might be some slightly more talented players that you've left on the, further down. But yeah. No, look, I 100% understand why you've gone in that direction. Yeah.
Plus, he's a left-handed bat, and that's my weakness. I can't do much with it.
Yeah, a very important, as you said it perfectly, very important person in the history of Pakistan cricket. There's no doubt. I probably have him ahead of Pataudi, I think, in terms of a cricketer, just because he played a little bit more. But yeah. Having said that, neither of them really made runs at test level, did they?
That's also true.
And maybe Pataudi was a better player. I'm not sure. Yeah.
He could also roll over his arm, Kardar, from what I was researching. So there's that. But anyway, Varun, it's back to you.
Can I just say I'm so glad I have the second pick for this, because finding two back-to-back cricketers would be impossible. I'm hoping Jared knows more about this person. I'm going Billy Murdoch.
Okay.
Yeah. I had Billy Murdoch really high. He was the third on my board.
Yeah, so he averaged 32 for Australia. And from what I know, in the late 1800s, that is a very good average, because no one averaged more than like 20. Because I remember finding bowlers who were averaging like one in that era in first-class cricket. So I'm like, so I assume 32 is a very good record. And he was part of the infamous Ashes test, right? The first official two tests.
Yeah, I think, let me just bring up his record. I think he might have been even better in a game before that. I think there's a test match, because he plays in the actual first test, and he goes on to play for over a decade, so he's around for a long period of time. But I think there's another test where he makes almost all the runs, and I think he had a bet with WG Grace that he was going to like outscore him. Yeah, at the Oval. He had this bet with WG Grace that he would outscore him in the Oval, and let's have a look. He made 211.
Okay.
So they made 551 in that game, and that's again a very important moment in cricket, because what's that, 1884, I think England had started to get back on top a little bit. I think that's the game I'm thinking about anyway. But I was wrong. He made 221 at the Oval in 1884, but the game I'm talking about is in 1880, when they were really trying to prove that they could play. That's the one where he has to bet with Grace. So he's got a bet with Grace, he's going to outscore him. Grace opens the batting, makes 152. That's not a bet that you want at the change of innings. And then Murdoch goes out and makes a duck, right? And so they follow on Australia, and Murdoch makes 153 not out and gets them over the line. And then England were chasing.
Stupid cricket episode, by the way.
It probably is. Yeah. England were chasing 57, and they changed the batting order for fun, and they lost 5 wickets on the way to 57 before Grace had to come in batting at number 7 to win that game. So, no, look, Murdoch, I think, and my memory of it is that that Grace really respected Murdoch, and he was thought to be in that sort of top 5 batters in the world for a decent period of time. So, yeah, I would definitely have him on this list.
He's not even the only Billy that could go picked on this, so that's interesting.
It's the only Billy I've got. Oh yeah, there's another Billy. I don't think the other Billy is very good, but yeah, he
got kidnapped
later.
He got kidnapped then though.
Yeah,
so there's that story.
All right, now this is where it gets a bit gets a little bit whiffy, but I think there's one player that you've both slept on so far, which is a player who played in the 1960s and then played again in the 1990s. Was still playing in the 1990s, I want to say.
Holy shit.
Jesus.
So I don't know how either of you missed out on this guy, but he was a spinner, and I think he was born. I just want to make sure. Yeah, he's born in Egypt.
Okay.
And he plays. Let's have a look here. He played his first class game in 1967, and he played his last first class game in 1994-95.
That is fucking ridiculous.
John Traikos was the South African spinner when they were kicked out of cricket forever. Hmm. And then he comes back in and he plays for Zimbabwe in the 80s into the 90s. He's still playing for them in the 92 World Cup.
Wow.
And fantastic bowler. But like a lot of those sort of guys, he was a spinner and a specialist spinner and a finger spinner. So no one gives a shit, right? But left-handers.
I heard the name somewhere. I just don't know where.
I didn't have him on my list. I missed him entirely.
No, I was looking at his name. I was like, it's not as good as I thought it was. So I was like, am I misremembering someone here?
Yeah. But his record at international level is not spectacular. It's weird actually, because he averages like 40 in test cricket and 50 in one day cricket, but no one could hit him off the square, especially left-handers. So I think he was a much better cricketer than that, but also he lived this fantastically weird life all the way through as well. And so for me, I think, you know, might be one of the best cricketers to ever be born in Egypt, if you need to throw that in as well. And I think he left, I think he lived in Egypt, Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Australia during his life. And he might have lived in England at one stage as well. Like he really did get around quite a bit. But I don't think there are many players who played at the top level from, you know, for that period of time. It really is one of the longest careers anyone's ever had. So John Traikos for me, I'll go next. And then behind him, I'm going to go Dougie Brown.
Okay.
Dougie Brown. I suppose you could have... Is Gavin Hamilton, does he qualify as well?
Yeah, of course he does. He's played for England.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he was a good cricketer. I think Dougie Brown, for me, I just thought... I just think he was a fantastic cricketer who we just didn't quite see enough of. Went on to be a very good coach as well, you know, later on. Handy, knobbly, medium pace type stuff with the ball. But I thought he could bat at international level. He just didn't play all that much and make all that many runs. But he was an outstanding first class career where he averaged 30 with a bat and 28 with a ball. And I think that if he was playing for Scotland now, I think he would have played quite a lot more. But you could have him or Gavin Hamilton here. Gavin Hamilton maybe had a higher ceiling than Dougie Brown. Maybe as Scottish fans will say, I've picked the wrong one. But I think either of those guys deserves to be on this list.
Dougie Brown has the name of the sort of bloke I would love to have a beer with. You know, oh, I'm just going to go grab a few cold ones or crack a few cold ones with my man, Dougie Brown.
Oh, wait a minute. There was another reason. Did Dougie Brown play for Namibia as well?
Oh, is he a tri-nation player?
Oh, my God. I'm just trying to remember if that's true or not. Maybe he didn't.
No,
I think he played for them, but I don't know if he played... I think he represented cricket in Namibia, but I don't think he played at the international level. But he almost was a try player, which would have been pretty cool.
That would have been crazy. Anyway, back to you, Varun. Where are you headed?
I'm just reading the Wikipedia.
Yeah, his sigh this point. Tells you a big story over there.
Yeah, I like Albert Trott because he walked in at 119 for 7 versus England. Makes 85.
Okay.
Then he walks in...
I can't believe you're going for the Albert Trotz of the world with so many modern cricketers on the table, dude.
Nah, it's just more fun.
I think Albert Trotz actually more of a cricketer than he would have liked. I think Albert Trotz is his kind of guy. Like, he was a slogger, right? Like, and a slogger ahead of his time. Is he the one who was supposedly hit the ball over Lord's? Is that him or is that another Trot?
I have zero idea.
I have no idea. For me, he's the new Trot because Jonathan is the guy I knew.
If anyone knows that, it's you, Jared.
Albert Trot hit the ball onto the roof of the pavilion at Lord's in 1899. He remains the only player to do so.
That is definitely a Burren pick. I love it already.
Yeah.
So I like it.
He doesn't play a lot of cricket, does he?
Who does he play for? I don't. Which are the two countries that he plays
England
for?
And Australia, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, England and Australia. He plays fighters. Not a lot.
Yeah, he was thought to be a really good cricketer. I don't know really why he didn't play more for either side.
He averages 38 with the bat and 15 with the ball, so I'm taking
him. Okay.
Yeah. I've never quite understood why he didn't play more tests. I don't know if he was like, it might have been because he was born in Melbourne. It might have been that he was not very rich, and so he played a lot of like jazz hat games and games for famous people and stuff like that rather than playing. He's born in northern suburbs of Melbourne into what would have been quite a poor area, is my guess. His brother plays as well. And did his brother play for both teams also? I'm trying to remember. No, his brother just played for Australia, I think, unless he played a game for South Africa. Can't remember.
Apparently,
but yeah,
his brother was a powerful influence in Australian cricket.
Okay.
No. Yeah, yeah. No, that's 100% right. So, yeah, his brother was Harry Trott, a really good cricketer. So, he came from a great cricket family, Albert Trott. He was pretty high up on my list, actually. So, I don't think that's a bad call.
All right, well, since I've already gone for two prehistoric picks in Iftikhar Ali Khan Pathodi and Abdul Hafiz Kardar, I think I'm just going to stick to the modern players now so that they get a mention on this. And for my fourth pick, I'm going to Singapore. And I'm gonna pick Tim David. I feel like he's gone way too late in this draft, honestly. he's played for both Singapore and Australia in T20s.
If you're doing international cricket, it's still a bit of a squeeze to fit him in, isn't it?
Yeah, but look at his T20I record, Jared. He's averaging 33.36 with a strike rate north of 161. That sort of record cannot go unpicked on this draft. And I'm a big Tim David fan. I know he's got that weakness versus wrist spin. But, you know, as far as demolishing pace is concerned, he's one of the more finer finishers that we have in the circuit right now.
I'm sure I've told this story before, but when I worked for Scotland and I had to do analysis, we didn't have much. All we had was YouTube clips. And he was the one player I knew a lot about. Like, I'd seen him play in the Big Bash before. I had friends in Perth. Like, I'm messaging everyone going, what can you tell me about this player? And so we had all these plans for him. And my plan was basically bowl fifth stump line. Bail height, and he pushes his hands at it, and if you've got slips in place, they'll take the catch. And of course, he gets dropped, right? And it doesn't matter because he goes out like the next over, and I'm like, great, we've got past him. And then he ends up taking like four or five catches and maybe getting a run out. And so he wins the game in a way that I didn't even have. So yeah, I would not be putting Tim David in my list. I only met him very briefly on that tour. He seemed like a really lovely guy as well. I have not seen him though do karaoke.
Okay, but he has got buckets for hands, and I've seen him take some blinders, and also he can bowl a bit. Like, he gives you a lot of dimensions, right?
He definitely bowled against Scotland, he has buckets for hands. He does drop some of the easiest catches I've ever seen and take some of the hardest catches.
He's suffering with the Glenn Phillips syndrome, basically. All right, now since you guys have not picked any modern players, there are so many guys who are going to miss out. There is a wicketkeeper bat who was amazing in T20s who I'm not going to pick. There is an Irish fast bowler who really should have been picked, and I'm not picking him either. And Jared, I think I'm going to nick off your final pick, actually, over here. For my last pick, I'm going Dirk Nannis, the Dutch-Australian left-arm fast bowler who is primarily remembered as a T20 player, even though he's played heaps of first-class cricket in Australia. There's that stupid cricket story where he's playing for Victoria, I think, and the Perth surface is supposed to aid him, and he bowls, like, what, one or two deliveries in total after bowling two beamers? There is that
three episode. Balls without hitting the pitch once.
Yeah. Go check out that episode of Stupid Cricket. It's a great one. But, you know, I love myself a fast bowler. He was also left arm. He was rapid. This guy was phenomenally quick, right? He was blistering and could bowl rockets. And, you know, He's the second Dutch player who I've picked. This guy only plays for Australia ahead of instead of South Africa. And I just want to highlight his T20i record because these numbers are insane. He takes 28 wickets in T20Is in 16 innings, and his bowling average is 16.39. So less than 17 apiece is what he takes his wickets at. And his economy is also 7.5. That is insane.
Lost a World Cup final for Australia. And also when the Dutch beat England at Lord's, he had his shittest ever game, I think, for the Dutch in that game.
True.
He was incredible. I think in real life, he's probably bowled the second or third fastest spell I've ever seen. I think Tate and Mark Wood might be slightly ahead of him. Just absolute lightning bowler. Didn't take cricket seriously till he was like 27, 28. Obviously, he was on his way to the Winter Olympics. He's one of my favorite people in cricket. I don't know if you guys have met him, but he really is like an absolute legend. Just one of the nicest guys. I think he probably deserves to go ahead of Tim David, but they both should be on the list, so that's fine.
Yeah. No. I mean, I have so many names, which I'm going to take in the end in honorary mentions, but that's it for me. I've picked all five of my players. And before we go back to Varun, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Cricket Picks with Jared, Bayram and Varun, and we'll be back in half a minute. Go nowhere.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year, and I loved every part of it, except for one, this little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, all one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, all one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
Welcome back to Crick Picks. You guys are with Jared, Bayram and Varun. And two picks to go, one each for Varun and Jared. Varun is up first, and let's see where he goes with this. Please let it be a modern player.
Have you picked Luke Ronke yet?
No, thank you, because I was confused.
Luke Ronke, yeah. Oh, what the hell happened there?
I don't know. We're all gone.
Did I do that?
Yeah, you might have, okay, but that's fine. Don't edit this out and shit. It was fun. Thank God you picked him. I was so afraid for him.
Yeah. Luke Ronke is my kind of batter. High intent in T20 cricket.
Is he not a better cricketer than Dirk Nannis or Tim David?
I don't know, man.
Brown?
I thought the record... I don't know, Jeff.
It feels like he made all his runs in ODI cricket in one innings.
Yeah, also, you know, when I looked at their records, I know Luke Ronke was a beast because I watched a lot of franchise T20s and he's a superstar for Islamabad United and a bunch of other places. But I thought the overall records in T20s were better for Nannis and Tim David, even if the sample sizes were low.
Probably true.
Yeah. But then again, you know, my favorite stat for Luke Ronke, and bear with me over here, is that he bats twice for Australia in T20s. He scores 47 runs off 27 balls and is dismissed twice, which is pretty good. He also bats twice for Australia in ODIs. He scores 76 runs off 37 balls and is dismissed each time again. And it's alarming to me how he then goes on to play 81 ODIs for New Zealand and 29 T20Is for them. And his numbers don't stack up to what they did for Australia. You know, and they never pick him again.
Australia just thought I remember talking to John Buchanan about him. And John Buchanan just said, on a flat pitch, you couldn't really stop him. But he just didn't think he was that good when there was anything in the wicket. He also has one of the most ridiculous records. He has the best strike rate in the first five balls of any player in history. Yeah. And I think that even includes whether you look at true strike rates or not. I think he might go up if you include true strike rates in that.
Yeah, we do it at some point. I feel like we have.
I've done his normal strike rate, but then I talked to some of the people he was with at the PSL and they were like, yeah, he's just nervous.
Yeah.
And he just tries to smash the first ball. So good on him.
And as I said, honestly,
my kind of batter for T20 cricket.
He has one generational season for Islamabad. They lift the title and he doesn't even have longevity in the PSL, but he would make a lot of people's all-time PSL teams. That's just how good he was.
Yeah, he's 36, 166 in PSL.
Yeah, and he would absolutely destroy opposition teams. They had it was always one-sided when Luke Ronke is on a tier.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, should we finish this off?
Yes, please.
Go for it.
Obviously, we're going to go through a couple of names at the end that didn't make it. And I wanted to put Kim Garth in, but her record didn't stand up as much as I wanted it to. She was the obvious one. So I'm going to go with someone who I just want to say his name out loud, if we're being honest. It's Simpson Claremonte Gullion, who plays for the West Indies and New Zealand. He's known as Sammy. If you look at most of these, you've got India, Pakistan, fine. South Africa, Netherlands, again, absolutely normal, right?
Yeah.
A lot of these are very, very normal, like South Africa and Namibia. What are we talking about here? And then you're just like, West Indies, New Zealand. It does not fit at all, right?
Honestly, when I was doing my research, I saw, okay, this dude plays for New Zealand and West Indies. I know Jared's going to pick him, number one. And it baffled my mind. It completely blew my mind. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really weird. So I think he played a bunch of tests for the West Indies and then just decided to move over to New Zealand. And I'm trying to remember the full story because I know I've written about it before. I think there was something where they waived his residency. So even West Indies were like, it's fine. Like if he wants to go over there and play, I think there's something to do with his residency. I can't remember anyway. Maybe I've misremembered it. But yeah, so then he goes over and he has a good career in New Zealand and ends up in the New Zealand side as well. So it's such a weird story just because those are just, it's almost impossible to get between New Zealand and the West Indies. Like, and he did this in the fucking 1950s, right? There's another great story. I know it's not.
If you took a ship, how long would it take?
New Zealand's first win, right?
He probably did take a ship, right? It would have taken him a year or something to get there.
It took him seven years to get between the two places. So there was another cricketer. There's a West Indian cricketer who plays for Australia in the 1800s. And he's one of my other favorite stories of just like, how did these things happen? Like, how did these people even get between these two different places? Like, they are so far from each other. So, no, I think he's one of the more famous ones. And obviously, I think Varun just said it a minute ago. He plays in New Zealand's first ever test win and then retires almost immediately.
Yeah, it is incredible.
5 minutes.
Honestly, so we've gone through our 15, and before we get to like listing them out and all of that stuff, I'd like to mention some players who I really think should have made it. And two players who stand out for me are Mark Chapman, played for Hong Kong, then for New Zealand. I think he's one of the more underrated white ball batters in contemporary cricket. I've watched him bat a lot successfully at that versus Pakistan. So maybe I'm like biased in that regard, but I love myself some Chappers. And he's also a left-hander. And the other one, Jared, I really thought that someone would pick him was Boyd Rankin, right? Like he was Ireland's attack.
I don't know if Boyd Rankin was that good, was he? He was okay.
I mean, He was tall, very tall. He was quite quick as well in his prime. And then you remember how he gets picked for that Ashes test, and that's the reason why he can't play for Ireland for like a hot minute, because England don't really persist for them.
No, I mean, he was on the list. I mean, Gary Balance is a better cricketer than him, and he's not on the list.
Gary Balance
said
was
Billy
another
Murdoch.
One.
Billy Murdoch.
I said Billy Midwinter.
Ed Joyce?
I said Billy Midwinter. Billy Midwinter, the guy who gets kidnapped by Gates. Not Gates.
Yeah.
Grace.
Grace's game.
Yes.
Ed Joyce, I think, is better than some of these players. I don't know how we haven't managed to get him in there as well. Yeah. There's also a great old one called Clayton Lambert, which you guys wouldn't have even seen.
I have. West Indies in the USA. The 2004 ICC Champions Trophy, Clayton Lambert is captaining the USA. I remember that. He was a big one. Xavier Marshall is another from the USA in the West Indies. And also Hayden Walsh Jr., who I had on my list.
Yeah, I had Michael Rippon, who... played for the Dutch and then disappeared and went and played for New Zealand, is it, afterwards?
Maybe.
I want to say, in that order.
A couple of Italians and Joe Burns and Jade Dernbach.
Yeah, I mean, I remember talking to Jade about that. And I think it'd be fair to say, I don't think he'd be too upset that he kind of saw it more as a holiday that he did as, he still tried very hard on the field, but he was like, they want to send me to Italy to play cricket? Yeah, let's go. Whereas now I think the Italian team is taking it quite seriously. They've got a few internationals, don't they, in that Italian team. Like there's, and some big bash players. It's like a big bash lineup, the Italian team at the moment.
True.
But yeah, there's a few players who did things like that towards the end of their career as well out there, no doubt about that.
And you mentioned Gavin Hamilton. He also made my long list. Corey Anderson is another big one that we missed, right? Was a prodigy for New Zealand. Breaks Afridi's record in ODIs, which AB then breaks right after. But then again, he was supposed to achieve great things. And then, weirdly enough, he plays in a World Cup final, in the ODI World Cup final for New Zealand in 2015. And then he knocks Pakistan out in the 2024 T20 World Cup final. So I think he was a good one.
Yeah, he's a weird arc, right? He plays for New Zealand in the World Cup final, is a dead ball of RCB. Then he joins the US.
He's true. Whatever you want him to be.
Yeah. And with respect to Ed Joyce, I nearly picked him because I think he's the anti-Nannes in the sense that Nannes plays back-to-back T20 World Cups, first for Netherlands and then for Australia. And then Ed Joyce helps Ireland qualify for the 2007 ODI World Cup. Ireland make it to the next round, but he's playing for England in that ODI World Cup. And then he once again represents Ireland in the 2011 ODI World Cup. So that was a fun one. And Gary Balance plays for Zimbabwe right at the end. And in his only test match, he scores 155 runs and is dismissed once by the West Indies. So there's that.
Yeah. Mm. I'm looking at Kim Garth's numbers. I reckon I could have slipped Kim Garth in as well. But I thought, maybe I was just disappointed. I just thought her numbers were better. And then when I looked them up, I was like, they're not quite as good as I thought they should be because she's a really good player. So yeah, there might be a lot of very unlucky. I think Balance has got to be the most unlucky in this though, doesn't he?
Like, maybe.
He has to be in the 15. He has to be in the 15 most talented to have
Chapman,
done this.
I think Chapman is the big one for me. No?
I think Chapman's a great player, but I don't think he's better than Gary Balance.
Yeah. Gary Balance was also a prodigy,
Balance was
right?
good in test cricket for a while. No. In his first year, he was very good in test cricket.
He actually scored his first 1,000 runs in 17 innings, and that was just behind Sutcliffe and Len Hutton for England. And he plays for Zimbabwe in the Under-19 World Cup in 2006, then goes on to play for England, and at the start, he's great. Then, of course, there's stuff that happens in his career that, unfortunately, he'll always be remembered for.
Many stuffs.
He did make amends, didn't he? There was an unconditional apology to Azeem Rafiq, from what I recall.
Yeah, my understanding of this is kind of, I don't know Azeem very well, but I know George Nobel very well, and that they have certainly mended a lot of fences between the two of them.
Yeah. Anyway, so that wraps up honorary mentions. Jared, can you tell us the list of 15 and then what each of us picked?
Bayram picked Iftikhar Ali Khan, Rolla van der Merwe, Abdul Hafiz Carter, Tim David, Dirk Nannes. Avaron went with Kepler Vessels, David Visa. He likes the W that sounds like a V. Billy Murdoch, Albert Trott, Luke Ronke. And I went JJ Ferris, Owen Morgan, John Tracos, Dougie Brown, Simpson, Clermonte, Gullien.
What a name and what a career. But anyway, you guys let us know who wins this. Maybe if none of you are experts on history, I feel like you'll vote for me. Right, because I've got Nannes and Tim David and Roloff. But anyway, it's a tough one. And I had a lot of fun shooting this, but that kind of wraps up this episode of Quick Picks. And just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. And that can prove to be a one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. But yeah, see you soon in another show. That's all for today. Have a good one, guys. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bayram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.